Tacky talk time, folks. State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy is here because it's Tuesday, Tacky.
Yeah, it's Tacky Tuesdays for a while longer, Joe. Happy to see you on this very warm May 21st.
I know. Here we are. We skip over spring, just launching right into summer this year, I think.
Well, it was a misty weekend, right? I mean, it was kind of deciding it was going to downpour or not at various points. But I mean, congratulations to the Quincy Yacht Club and the membership for a great 150th anniversary on Saturday night, despite some mist and wind. And of course, the memorial at the Island of Flags at Four Point was Sunday. And, despite the rain, I mean, or mist or pseudo rain, it was kind of a weird, cool and damp afternoon. But I mean, it's always good to see folks and, memory of some folks that passed away in the past year or so. And, nice dedication to Guy Ferris and, remembering folks like Joe Brill and Paul Moody and Richard Morrissey and many others.
And here, Memorial Day is now right in front of us. Hard to believe.
Yeah, it's we blink before no one's here. Germantown has a Memorial Day service this Friday, actually, about 9 a.m. And then the Memorial Day parade on Monday about 10:30, step off for the parade-ish. Generally, lineup is around 9:30, but I mean that's for the bands and whatnot. So I generally try to get there, quarter after 10 or 10, to line up for the electeds. And we have a Mount Wilson Cemetery dedication, and Mount Wilson Cemetery looks wonderful. With the city and the mayor and the city council and the parks department and cemetery department and DPW, all of them did a great job on the new entrance way, and it's going to be great to see all that. And we had the Homes for Heroes event by Quincy Veteran Services at Marymount Park. I was told by Christine, the Veterans Director, that it was a really good hit and they got some good local coverage.
They did, yeah. I saw a couple of the stories, which surprised me that would take an interest in such a local event. Not that it's not worthy, certainly, but usually they don't.
Yeah, I think Christine's done a great job here promoting good work Quincy does. I appreciate the fact that she lets me know in advance. She sends me a kind of an advanced calendar, so to speak, so I have at least some inkling of what's going on around here, and try to see my schedule, do my best I can to get as many as I can. I mean, we all aware that it could be in one place at once, and I like to drive safely. I can't speak for other politicians.
Right. We don't want you to make that kind of news, Jackie.
Yeah, I like to drive safely from place to place, not to cause of problems on the road. It's been a busy month, and of course there's AIP month on top of everything else. So the governor did an AIPI event yesterday, recognized some longtime advocates in our community, for the Asian community, and signed the proclamation recognizing the month. I worked on passing that into law with the House Asian Caucus some years ago now, and it's one of the states that was pretty much at the end of requiring a proclamation every May. It's kind of fascinating how we're very behind on certain things in Massachusetts, and until you bring this to someone's attention that it doesn't exist.
Yeah, actually, just last night, the city council approved making Lunar New Year a school holiday in Quincy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't expect a lawsuit over this, obviously, but I find it very, again, curious how one governing body can tell another governing body what to do in a very narrow manner. But that's not my problem, so to speak. At least I don't expect a lawsuit. I don't expect anything like that to happen. Given for the mayor is the chair of the school committee, has expressed support for the matter. He's also the mayor who's going to sign the ordinance into law. But I do find it very curious how one a governing body at the same municipal level, because they're the kind of co-equals, has a jurisdiction over the other. But I mean, this does open the door for the city council to implement school policies, which is generally the purview of the school committee. So, example, if they decide to change what is a half day, which is now Wednesday, I think it used to be Tuesday when I was a kid, to move it to, let's say, Monday, or they decide to change a policy regarding certain types of admissions, or changing the school districts, for example, around, because the school districts are set by the school committee on what kids go to which school based or geographical locations. I mean, you know, this opens actually a kind of an interesting slippery slope where advocates could try to bypass the school committee and things they think is important go straight to the city council instead.
I thought the same thing. Yeah, I was questioning that as well. But according to the city solicitor, there was no impediment to the city council voting on this particular ordinance. So
well, I mean, that also translates to no impediment on future action by city councils. You know, we do know the city council has final say regarding the budget, including the school budget, because of Proposition 2.5. Some of you may not realize that prior to Proposition 2.5, the school committee actually had a say on your property taxes because the school budget was set separately from the city council. So the city council didn't have a say under Prop 2.5 and the change in state law. You know, tied them inside the budget, but traditionally speaking, the city council doesn't touch the school committee budget, and
right.
I'm not sure they can. I know there's been fights around the state between school committees and councils and selectmen and aldermen. I mean, it's depending what form of government you're in. But I mean, it's very. I don't recall any time a city council, or alderman, or board of selectmen, you know, overruled a school committee budget. But like I said, I mean, it's curious. It's curious. Again, this is the nerd in me regarding separation of government.
Yeah, no, I agree. I had the same questions too. So we'll see what happens. I just want to get back to the House to House for Heroes event for just a second. Christine said they visited the homes of 2,300 veterans, and it's not too late. So if you didn't get a visit and you are a veteran, contact the Veteran Services Office, and they can provide, you know, explanation of whatever benefits that you're entitled to.
Yeah, and I can't emphasize the importance of the Quincy Veterans Agent. I mean, you know, there's a lot of folks out there who don't know the full scope of their services. And you know, if you're in the former military or you know, any form, I mean, I encourage your folks to give Christine a call. Even if you don't need anything, it doesn't hurt to know what they offer. And maybe you have a friend in need that you can provide better guidance for. And,
right.
I mean, you know, I'm obviously in the job where we try to provide guidance for folks of where to go for social services or city services or state services or federal services. I mean, we do a lot of like helping people figure out what they need. But I mean, this is something that I think everyone you know should know about. And even if you're not a veteran and you have a friend that's a veteran, you know, you can call and say, hey, you know, I got a friend with this kind of problem. Do you guys help with that?
Exactly. Yeah, just get on her radar screen. That way she knows for, you know, for future benefits, too, that might not be around right now, you know, but are coming in the future.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, it's who knows how things are going to keep changing, right? I mean, the federal government in particular, I mean, regarding services are set by regulation. So, absolutely. I guess both strongly encourage folks to reach out to them.
President Biden is in town today speaking in part about like the PACT Act, I think, for veterans.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, the only thing I got was like the standard, you know, I'm going to be in town fundraising email.
I'm sure there'll be some of that too.
We don't get advance notice of presidential arrival, folks, in case you're wondering. I do get plenty of I'm looking for money emails from like all over the country. From Democrats running for office, as well as all kinds of special interest groups. And believe it or not, in the State House, I mean, I get newsletters from the other end of the political spectrum as well, from Washington, D.C., not anything local. The local ones we all know because they're part of think tanks we engage with normally as a matter of public policy discussion. But, I mean, I was always surprised when I see these emails from D.C. on the other end of the political spectrum.
That's interesting. Don't they know that they're sending it to Massachusetts?
Oh, much less Democrats in Massachusetts.
Which is, I mean, a pretty good chance that you're going to hit a Democrat if you're sending it here.
Well, yeah, that's without saying. I mean, we have a supermajority Democrat legislature. I don't do this stuff. I'm just telling some of the stuff I get.
Well, I mean, they pay for third party, you know, political advisors, I'm sure, and they just blanket everything.
Well, it's a good reflection of the cost effectiveness, right? I mean, email is actually very, very cheap. In the days of postage and paper and assembly and printing is much more expensive than, you know, hiring. You're right. Hiring a third company that has like everybody's mailing list and then they just blitz, you know, everyone. And of course, state law prohibits fundraising through, I don't know, state devices. Big said one, right? Duh. So I mean, obviously, if you're out of stater, we do get these kind of solicitations for political things for money, and I'm just like, whatever. I mean, they're not local. They're like in Chicago or D.C. or New York or somewhere else, and I just ignore them because, it's. I mean, you're not gonna. I'm not gonna call OCPF on these folks. I mean,
Right. Yeah, it's
there's a point where it's just silly. You just kind of like it's part of the job you do with you, whatever.
yeah. Speaking of the State House, that's where you are.
We are. I got meetings today. Actually, meeting with constituents regarding a cystic fibrosis. Did I pronounce that correctly? CF. God.
Cystic fibrosis.
Yes, thank you very much. My ability to
Gotcha.
enunciate continues to haunt me. So we're talking about that, and they want me to sponsor a resolution recognizing, dedicating a month to it. So we'll have a conversation about that today. And it's also a good day for the staff for me to catch up. I have a lot of committee bills, believe it or not, especially home petitions and bills that left committee, including my own bills that we need to chit chat about and decide how I'm going to try to manage between now and July 31st on offense or defense, depending where I am on certain pieces of legislation. We're running out of time. It's no surprise to folks that there's some big pieces we need to debate, including a housing bond bill and the economic development bill next month. We did an information technology bond bill, which I'll tell you right now is exciting. I mean, we have to upgrade our tech every so often. As you know, cybersecurity threats are constant, and we have to upgrade our technology. Do some customer server portal upgrades. I'm very aware that the Division of Occupational Licenses has a terrible web portal. It's not the only one. So I'll make some investments in better customer service on that front. And start the conversation AI as well as how the state utilize data analysts. This is something that's not becoming a forefront. Not, I know it's AI, but it's really data analysis, right? Because you use the AI to break down information. And now, how the state secure that information, and that's part of the IT bond bill as well. We did this healthcare reform bill on Thursday, this massive six-pager, single space.
You're gonna go bleary-eyed reading that.
Am going blurry-eyed reading that. And of course, the speaker, Weinmar, has a very strong interest in healthcare. As I like to remind folks, you want to talk about solar panels, wind, and hairdressers. I mean, it seems to be my wheelhouse, as well as how you get your alcohol to your house. But you get the healthcare, it is a tangled web. I think people don't appreciate the complexity of the volume of different kinds of healthcare, different sectors, insurance companies, for profit, not for profit. And so, for instance, some lessons learned from the Steward healthcare situation regarding better notification. And we know that Steward healthcare doesn't own all the land, it's owned by third party, real estate investment trust funds, REITs. And how Steward used to like work with those guys because they're screwed too when they leave.
Right.
So it's a lot of moving parts, not simply just at hospital, so to speak, community health centers and everything else. And a couple of interesting things here. One is that they establish a healthcare commission, health insurance commission, as opposed to leaving it part of division insurance. They do some reforms to the Commonwealth healthcare. CHIA, term what the INA stands for, and a couple of different of the other policy agencies who do some tweaking around, expand some of their requirements and research, continue to review cost benefit analysis on patient care, trying to do cost containment is what it's called, to get a better analysis of what's going on, try to get some hands around that. A part of it is also go after some of the for-profit entities that make a lot of money in insurance but give nothing back to the healthcare system. Shields MRI is the one I like to say the most because that's the one everybody knows exists. But there's a lot of other like Quest Diagnostics and so many other for-profits that contribute nothing back to healthcare. They just basically take insurance money, and your copay and just give nothing back. So
Yeah.
their speaker went after them. When he was the majority leader back around before COVID, I think it was one of those bills that died on the vine in 2018, I think.
Okay.
And we're back for a second go at it.
I was going to ask you if there are other, for-profit healthcare institutions that run hospitals in Massachusetts, like Steward did.
No, Stuart is kind of an anomaly. And as like I say, it's not uncommon to find for-profit hospitals on many other states, but it's kind of a unique issue coming, up the Northeast corridor, starting like New Jersey area, going northbound. I mean, there are like charitable hospitals around the country. I'm not saying they don't exist, but it's not uncommon in other places to find for-profit. So, and Stuart was always kind of a peculiar unicorn up here in the sense that, this is an economic model that we don't see. Then obviously that economic model failed. But again, I'm not going to say the not-for-profit hospitals are great either. I mean, Lawrence Hospital's on its deathbed. North Adams Hospital just came back to life. King Hospital still struggling. South Shore Hospital is like 150% capacity now because of the Stuart loss. And Norwood Hospital got flooded. They just got back online. Brockton Hospital, caught fire this year, and they're trying to get back online. And Milton Hospital's tiny. If it wasn't part of Beth Israel, it would be gone already. So I mean,
They realized that, I think, yeah.
the big teaching hospitals have been under massive mergers with a lot of these smaller regional hospitals for accommodation survival. But you also assume a lot of their debt, and crappy reimbursements rates depending on which insurance company or which government healthcare program you are, especially. So.
That's what did in Quincy Hospital, right?
Yeah, because I think it was like 60+% or 70% of Quincy Hospital patients were in some government health care, especially on Mass Health or basically Medicare, because it was such an old city. And it results in a loss because the speaker can tell you better, but if I remember correctly, I think the reimbursement rate was only 60 cents on the dollar.
Sounds right.
So the hospital has to eat that 40 cents. It's not 100% covered by the feds. And the state reimbursement is only covers 50% of what the Fed gives us, and we don't have enough money to make up the differential.
It's not a sustainable model, business model, right?
No, it's not, which is why I see these massive mergers, and teaching hospitals have become more teaching hospitals because they need the grant monies. And then they charge you through the nose, which is part of the cost containment issue the speaker is really battling here, to try to get these bigger hospitals to contain the cost because they promote themselves as better hospitals. And I'm not going to agree or disagree with that, but if you can get service at a regional hospital that's the same kind, that isn't like an organ transplant, open heart surgery, the reimbursement rate is actually cheaper at a lower cost. I mean, not low cost, but a regional hospital than it is going to a big teaching hospital. And that's kind of a problem. So, I mean, yeah, I'm not arguing the Partners doesn't have some of the best facilities on the planet. But should you have your insurance company pay five times all because you choose to go to there as opposed to go someplace more affordable? And sometimes it's purely geography, like Quincy's kind of in a bad spot, right? We're next to Boston, South Shore is south of us. There is no other regional hospital. We're now forced to go to Boston, right? The lack of a Quincy hospital, shifts the economic model for people in Quincy. But at the same time, though, we need to keep Cape Cod and Brockton Norwood situation and North Adams. I mean, you look at a map in North Adams, they had no hospital for years. And as much as we should have a hospital because we're such a large city, at least Boston's next door. If you're in North Adams, you really don't have anywhere to go. I mean, you're
Just
Berkshire Hospital or Springfield.
right.
It's a haul. I mean, you look at a map and just look at the road system. Getting from North Adams to Berkshire Hospital or Springfield Hospital, I mean, it's a haul, haul, haul. It's a big haul. So, I do understand that, Quincy should a hospital have a hospital given its size, but we're not driving 2.5 hours to get to a hospital.
It's not an easy issue, obviously. It's been a problem for years. I wonder what we could learn. Can we learn anything from like the medical institutions in Canada or Europe?
Well, I mean, people like to promote Medicare for all or universal health care, but the problem is that it's not one economic model. Every model is different. So if you look at the Canadian model versus the Australian model versus the British model, versus the different models, in France and Japan and others, it's not a uniform thing. And I think that's the thing people have this misconception. And they do their own cost containment, which means they take the least invasive option first, since it's government health care. Unless you want to pay out of pocket, they always take the least, cost-effective option. This idea that you have choice depends where you are. I mean, not everyone's the same. And Japan does fitness checks. God forbid you have fitness checks in this country regarding your health or determination of like paying penalties for your physical health, right? And my cousins in Australia can't get melatonin.
Interesting.
That is not that is a prescription drug that must be approved, which is not in this state, in this country, is an over-counter drug.
Right.
So, the idea that it's kind of like everything's the same is not, and it's a question of what the economic model that makes sense, because the government really dictates cost containment, since they're the ones that are paying the freight. And again, everywhere is different. That's why I think people kind of like think that it's like two buckets, us and everyone else. It's not, and even then, it's not two buckets. It's 50 states and territories buckets, and everyone else. Because since we control health insurance, the state and the state law can mandate what health insurance covers. For example, my favorite is diabetes. For example, we mandated the covering of testing a very long time ago when I was still working in the state senate for Morrissey. I mean, that was a big win, right? And then, we again, my one of the things I'm very proud of is the step therapy. Where you and your doctor after certain consultations with your doctor, obviously, you get the prescribed name brand drug because it's the one that's more effective than a non-name brand or alternative choice drug, which the insurance company may suggest because it's a lower cost option, but it's not exactly the same, but it's considered close enough. And maybe close enough isn't what you need, and the doctor
Right.
usually makes that decision. And step therapy involves a lot of medications that isn't like your regular run-of-the-mill. It's kind of one of those rarer circumstances where it's less commonplace. And within the building now, talking about pharmacy, what do you call it? PBM, pharmacy based management, I think. There's these, like, I didn't realize that you're a pharmacy as a company between them and the manufacturer and the insurance company regarding reimbursement rates and what drugs they can get their hands on.
Oh, I didn't know that either.
CVS Caremark, some of them may be familiar with that. CVS bought Caremark, and that's actually, I didn't realize that was it because I got that letter in my health insurance with the GIC of the state, and I was scratching my head at what it is. But basically, they're in charge of authorizing reimbursements for your medication, and they're the ones that negotiates between my health doctor, which is Atrius Healthcare, and the insurance company. And then this company also dictates what drugs to buy on behalf of Atrius. Atrius doesn't get to pick their drugs.
Well, there's so many hands in the pot, it's no wonder why the costs are so high.
Well, I think it was eventually designed to be like anti-monopolistic and try to create some cost controls, but it turned, as you point out, it turned out the complete opposite.
Right.
What the intention was to try to create monopolization muscles by certain larger healthcare groups, as well as pharmacies. I mean, between the pharmacies and the manufacturers and insurance, trying to create this intermediary. The intermediary has become a broker that, from what I can tell so far, and of course, healthcare finance committees would be in charge of figuring this out. It's basically gouging all of us through downstream. So when they gouge the insurance company, they gouge the pharmacy, and then it comes down to us, right? So, we all hate our insurance at some level, but it is a pass-through system. So when one group gets gouged, it just passes, it ripples through the whole system.
Right.
And it's identifying which one in the system is creating this unfair marketplace or unfair price structure that you and I are eventually paying for at the end of the day. Healthcare finance is tackling this very large healthcare reform bill. Now we'll see if they get to try and address drug costs next.
Yeah.
This isn't easy, as you guys can all tell. I can barely get my head around this easily as well. I'm very dependent on the committee to tell me how things work. And of course, I just call the speaker because he knows better than anybody else how healthcare works. Cannot emphasize that enough.
We'll see where the bill goes again. We'll try again, as he says, I'm sure.
Yeah, I don't know what the Senate proposal is. Guys, I mean, Senate and the House never have identical bills or close identical bills passing between the night for some reason. The Senate doesn't want to do what we want and vice versa. This is a whole issue of personalities and people in this place. But we also tend to go first. I mean, it was the appropriation bill in the state constitution, the House goes first. Senate goes second. So, I always remind folks, advocates that come to the House, I'm like, well, the Senate can say that we didn't put it in, but they go second, so they have no excuse.
Oh, look out, senators.
That's logic, right? I mean, you can't say you didn't put something in when you have a chance to put something in because you go second.
Right.
Oh, yeah, you strip it out and say we didn't do it, but we went first, but it's already there. I mean, this is kind of a logic thing, right? If you were the first one out of the gate, then the second one has the second say in the matter or whatnot. Also, this thing advantage regarding, as I said earlier last week, I mean, the challenge of our current fiscal numbers, I mean, they're going to get a good snapshot of April, and they're going to have a preliminary guess on what May is going to look like in revenue. So,
Oh yeah, speaking of, did you see that the just I think it was just out today, the millionaire's tax, quote unquote, is overperforming, like $1.8 billion collected, I think.
yeah, I haven't seen that stat yet. But again, that money doesn't come to general fund. That money goes straight to the trust funds for education and transportation. So I never truly conventionally get to touch that money in a conventional manner. So, but I wouldn't, how do I put this, use one data set on year and on revenue or tax collection to represent the future.
Yeah, I understand. You need a good track record before you can call it a dependable source of income.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking like 5 years, right? And we really need to look at multi-years. And the economy changes, people change, people live, people die, people move, people stay, people come in, people go. I mean, it's, who knows, maybe a recession in 2025 in some form, and it hits the entire income spectrum. And, maybe there'll be less millionaires taxes as a result. I mean, it could be as simple as that.
Stay tuned, as they say.
But yeah, nobody get that excited over one data set. I mean, I'm waiting for the advocates to come running out and say, oh, it's a victory. But I mean, what happens next year? It turns out, economy tanks a bit and the thing doesn't come in at great numbers. And, what do you say? I mean, you're a total failure. I mean, that's just not rational way of thinking in my world.
Hey, and I was wondering about, remember we talked quite a while ago about your double utility pole issue, Tacky. Any update on that?
Unfortunately, my bill, I believe, has gone to study order by a telecom utilities and
Oh
energy.
no, not study. That's bad.
That's bad, folks. It means that the committee is going to study the issue and it's not going to go any further. The cycle, as the committee decided, it's going to put it into a state where they're trying to continue to contemplate. In other words, it's not going any further as they continue to contemplate. So,
So we play taps for that one for now.
for now, but also again, I also encourage. I mean, you look at the polls and you see the ones that are left in the bottom line. Definitely call your city council, the mayor, and say, "Hey, can you get off the bottom line?" But if it's a lot of stuff up or up, it gets more complicated because guys like in Comcast is not regulated by the state. It is a private entity that we have pretty much no control over. They're not subject to DPU or DTE, Department of Public Utilities or Department of Telecom and Energy regulatory oversight. So, contractual agreement between them and the utility company. So it's kind of point out it's pretty complicated and it's a lot of non-regulated entities. So a few entities that you can have some regulatory oversight, maybe the alarm companies at the bottom as well as the cities and towns. But Verizon is actually not a terrible partner with National Grid and NSTAR, so that's kind of workable. But everything in the middle that's private companies always really tough situation to try to suss out what's happening around here, right? So in the short term, as I said, if you see the bottom lines, definitely call your city council, the mayor, to get a move on and getting those lines out of its up or up. Obviously I'll do what I can to encourage Verizon particularly to move themselves off the pole, but Comcast ones can be a little tougher.
I understand you and Representative Ayers rode the Marina Bay Ferry recently.
No, I don't ride ferries. So Bruce took the hit for me on this
He didn't convince you to get on board, Jackie?
one. No, ain't doing it.
I know you hate the water. I know.
Yeah, I there will be a point I will. I mean, if I have a trip to the airport and the ferry schedule is in the right schedule, I mean, I'm more than tempted to take the 20-minute ride, another 10 minutes to the airport for a 30-minute ride, depending which terminal I'm getting at. Bruce did take the ride. He did go to the airport. There is a shuttle there to wait for you at the terminal. Obviously, you should make a little bit of buffer time. Don't, too close. But it was, you know, an easy trip to Long's Wharf, to the airport, to Winthrop. So again, I mean, you don't just because of my consternations regarding water travel on a personal level regarding fear, should not discourage anyone else to want to use this transportation. I do strongly encourage it, and so does the delegation. But Bruce assures me that it is a safe and efficient ride.
It's a great service, especially for folks. Imagine if you live right there at Marina Bay. I mean, it's right outside your front door.
Oh, absolutely. And its ridership is going to determine its survivability. So the greater usage, the more likely we're going to continue this project into the future. I know the delegation through Bruce and John leading this in the, well, the House right now. John's going to have to lead in the Senate. But I mean, you know, Bruce was able to get $100,000 for the Exploring Point Park Ferry. So, you know, there is a state funding source dedicated to it to help its sustainability. So, I mean, it isn't like we're not working on the issue. And, you know, a lot of, you know, congratulations to Bruce on continuing this effort. And, you know, John's going to continue working on this effort in the Senate. But it is really up to riders to justify the cost to make it sustainable. So, you know, if you work in Boston, try to get to Logan. I mean, give it some consideration, particularly if you're working the, you know, Long Wharf area and don't mind walking the financial district. Or you can catch the Blue Line in the aquarium, you know, to go to State Street Station if you just want to take a short train hop. But that's up to you all. But I mean, we are very much encouraging folks to try to keep the ridership as high as possible. And as a result, you know, we want to sustain this, you know, very, actually very efficient transportation service. And yes, I'll get on it at some point when I absolutely positively, you know, decide that it's much more efficient than some of the alternative options, particularly on the airport, as soon as I.
Well, what folks don't know is you were stuck in traffic just before this interview today.
Yeah, we live in a funny world where I'm dashing to the office to get to a screen. Some of you may be understanding what I'm thinking.
Would have been quicker to come here to the studio, Jackie.
Well, I have a noon time-ish meeting, give or take. So it's about 11:48 right now. But yeah, I got caught on two traffic accidents on the expressway coming in. I gave myself a full hour, and I clearly did not schedule enough time because they weren't on my Google Map as a problem, because as you know, Google Map isn't real time, it's a delay. So this will happen, and it's come back to like we're coming back to like a normal situation.
That's
But
right.
most days I like to plan all my video on one day at home, because it seems silly to me to be stuck in traffic trying to get to a screen. We could do that at home, but because Joe is special,
Ooh, wow.
we
Okay.
provide, yeah, we provide you special accommodations regardless of whether or not I have meetings at the office.
Thank you. I am honored and touched. And our viewers, I'm sure, appreciate it.
Oh, again, I mean, if you have a thought, opinion, or question, I mean, definitely drop a line to Joe. You know, he's my intern now, I guess, but unpaid intern. But no, seriously, I mean, if you know, have a thought or a question, I mean, even if you're not a Quincy resident, you know, drop an email to, you know, QATV. It's on their website, QATV.org, and let people know what you think of Joe's work and, you know, our time together. I mean, is that like literally an archive of like 4 years of stuff now with two of us? And you all know that just because I see something 1 week doesn't mean I'm right all the time. I do correct myself subsequent weeks later when I find out that I either can't enunciate correctly or the facts get jumbled in my head because we're doing this in real time, in the sense of not, you know, exactly like, you know, have everything in front of me. And sometimes I actually do. I pull up emails or whatnot in front of me if Joe says something that I haven't read a new service yet. So, because I'm not, you know, he's ahead of me in new service. He's up at 5 a.m. reading the stuff.
That's right. That's right. Early bird.
Yeah.
But yeah, we love always love to hear from folks. Absolutely. We can't know it all everywhere. So let us know.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe we'll do some, again, we like the fact that we can do some fun programming. It isn't always, you know, talking about politics and government and things this day. Also, I mean, if you guys want to hear something off topic, you know, we're happy to, you know, engage in a conversation or something. The questions you may have that is maybe not necessarily, you know, simple as that.
Sure.
I mean, I love talking about this stuff, but you know, I'm not averse to talking about Any other random topic? I mean, I've been listening to a lot of Neil deGrasse Tyson lately on Star Talk and realized that it's been a long time I get caught up on my astrophysics lessons.
Okay. Wow.
Hey, you got to keep yourself mentally stimulated. And I can't, I mean, all my friends are into documentaries. Well, I have nothing against documentaries, but I mean, I have a lot to cram in my brain. So I tend to like to watch stuff that, relaxes the brain in the sense that it's a little more fantasy or, find a subject matter to learn that's really way off course. I mean, I do, human stuff. My life is very much revolve around helping people and public policy, which, is generally a lot of people impact. You do environmental policy, there's a human component to it, right? It doesn't matter. It all has a human component. So, learning about stuff that it's totally out left field from what I normally do is, it's kind of part of mental relaxation.
Any more changes in the political spectrum in terms of your colleagues retiring, moving on?
No more new words out. I mean, I think May 30th is the final day to get your ethics, I'm sorry, your financial disclosures and your nomination papers to the city Secretary of State's office. But yeah, I think everything's kind of leveled out in here. I mean, it's always possible someone could leave like later next year or early later this year, early next year to take the job in administration, or maybe there's a special election because another office holder at the county level somewhere in the state, leaves midterm, for example, triggers a special election, or another state senator leaves and then the House triggers a special election if a House member leaves. And there's always a chance it's happening. It's not uncommon to see maybe between one and five. During the legislative cycle, leave for any reason midterm or run for another position that becomes available. So that's kind of part of the nature of life up here, generally between one and five. And fortunately, I've been around sadly for four passing aways in the House during one cycle, which is something we don't want to see, obviously. I want to have people do their service, and I want people to always want people the best after leave politics to enjoy things they don't get to normally do. And it's people, everyone should deserve time to do what they want after they put in time in their day jobs.
We better wrap it up before the Zoom gods cut us off.
Hopefully it's not the state house internet. I mean, as we talked about the IT bond bill earlier,
Right. $1.2 billion. You should get something for your money.
part of that is only 10-year appropriation. A very small part, about 10% to 30-year appropriation. So,
Okay.
a future legislature is going to come back and revisit the issue somewhere between 5 and 7 years down the road to prepare another bond bill for another 10-year run. Generally, you don't wait till the bond bill expires. You generally have one prepped to replace the bond bill when the other bond expires. In Massachusetts, we don't do infinite bond bills. All bond bills are time dated for the authorization for the governor to act. So it's not open-ended. The feds have a lot of open-ended bond bills. We do not. They have one, but they do have a spending plan. So yeah, it's 11:54. We both have 12 o'clock. So, yeah, just bother Joe. Why don't even bother giving me my number? Just call Joe. Then you gotta call me.
Okay.
So, but no, as you can tell, I'm in the office, so we are staffed. As I like to remind folks, we are in person. So 617-722-2370, 617-722-2370 is the phone number. I do encourage people to call the office, tacky.chan, tacky dot chan at emmahills.gov. Check my emails very regularly. And just to let you all know, I do prioritize. It's not like I don't see your emails. It's just that we're constantly shifting priorities and people's needs. Constituent service always comes first. State Representative Tacky Chan Facebook. There'll be some posts with AIPI stuff actually this month. So you can see me at some events. I'm actually going to be at South Cove Manor's annual dinner tonight. So add to my to-do list in the evenings. And we're doing the presidential library event, Adams Presidential Library event on Thursday night. The mayor's got that going. So there'll be some pictures of me again at other events. Not all of them, but the ones that we have good pictures of, I was at some. No blur.
Okay, that sounds good.
But yeah, State Representative Tacky Chan. And we have our X account at Tacky Chan. And we have an Instagram account, which is tied to the Facebook account. I have no idea, as you can tell. I'm
That's what
just,
we have young people in our lives for.
that is 100% why I have young people in my lives. lack of children requires me to rely on a young staff to tell me how the world works on technology. This is the drawback of not having kids, I guess. And then you have MALegislature.gov, MALegislature.gov. Do not actually have to call me for bill status. That is updated live. When you see it, I see it. I do not have special access, interestingly. It's simultaneous information we get on MALegislature.gov, tackychan.org. Actually, people actually use the form in there, so if you reach out to me. But it's also great because there are a lot of resource bill numbers. You have QA TV here with Joe, and obviously you got Joe first thing in the morning to get your Quincy in the AM brief updates, which is great. The car ride in to get your quick hits locally, what's going on. And I'd like to close out congratulating Michelle Hanley. Michelle, I know Michelle for many years, and she's going to be the next director of Elder Services. After working recreation for a very, 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 very long time. And she has great people skills. She's very caring. I think she's going to do great for the seniors in our community. And I suspect that she's not going to leave the kids behind. She has a very strong heart for those, for the kids as well. So congratulations, Michelle. You're going to do great.
We'll check in with you next week, Techie.
Take care of you next week, Joe, and hopefully won't be in traffic last time. Maybe I'll do it in traffic, just audio only.
Oh, there you go. Hands-free, of course.
Yeah, you can hear the honking. Take care.
All right, take care.